Hey there, AfterBuzzers. Welcome back. It's Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 17, Distant Sun. I'd say this episode was more than palatable. Ha ha ha. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, nurse. Hey guys, thank you for joining us here on After Buzz. It's the Supergirl After Show, and I'm your host, Tara J. Miller. But I'm joined by a wonderful, 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 wonderful group of panelists. Let's start from my left, Stephanie Winger.
Hi guys, good to be back with you all. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Stephanie Winger.
Lex Michael.
I am Lex Michael, that's true. I am all over social media at The Lex Michael.
And Lucretia Lyon.
I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And you can find me at Tari J, TauriJay. And while you're here, before we get started, don't forget to like and subscribe. Hit that thumbs up. Let everyone know that you love what we're doing. All right.
Yes.
So,
I love what we're doing.
Straight into this episode. Also, this song choice, Paris just don't understand.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very relevant to the episode.
You don't
totally
say.
There
yes
was some sweet daddy issues.
Do elaborate further.
Oh, well, yes. You see, there was a lot of issues in this episode with one's parents. One could say Mon-El's parents, specifically. I mean, though, there were a lot of daddy issues to go around.
There was, but then, like,
and
it got
mommy issues.
It got straight up Thronesy. Like, Thronesy level family drama.
Oh, yeah. So, let's take it from the top, guys. Let's really, like, dig into the meat of this whole episode.
All right. Get your meat shovels out.
Oh, yeah.
Get them out. As you break ground on the meat, picture the meat sounds
yeah
in your mind.
Squishy to squishy. Anyway.
That sounds sexy.
So there's a bounty on Kara's head, and people are just coming straight for her, which leads to a seriously sweet fight scene.
For like half a second when they started talking about the fact that alien bounty hunters were going to be tracking Kara, I had this moment of hope that maybe we'd get, if not an appearance by, at least a reference to Lobo.
Yeah.
But I think that they have movie plans for Lobo, so I don't think that's in the cards.
I mean, I have movie plans for Lobo. I think that Danny McBride should play him, and that needs to happen now.
You heard it here first.
I would watch that movie.
Danny McBride is Lobo.
I would watch a Danny McBride.
I
want to
make that happen.
Lobo
movie.
Well, we got the nod in the first season, so that was nice. I think that's the most we're going to get, though.
Probably. For a while.
Yeah.
Anyway. We got Superman this year, so I don't know. I feel like anything is possible.
That's true. But we didn't get a Lobo. We only got a series of weird dudes, one who has an eye laser, and then another dude whose brain makes, like, wavy bits, and then he can control you telekinetically.
He may have been the puppeteer, is what the internet and my nerdiness is saying.
Oh, yeah?
That guy. But, yeah, the guy with the cool laser eye patch, I have no idea. That was just cool.
Yeah, that was Cyclops' cousin.
Other Stephanie, universe.
What do you think? How did you think these bounty hunters fared against Kara?
I mean, this is always a show that's interesting because you know ultimately that nothing's going to happen to Supergirl. Like, long term, she has to be there, right?
Yeah.
So it's a game of how do you make an episode interesting where she's battling back but she's put in danger. And I thought that this was one of the best that they've done in the series in that way. Like, she did have moments where you felt like, wow, she could at least be injured. She wasn't as, I guess, like, Supergirl-esque as sometimes, if that makes sense.
I get why there's not more of it lying around, but, like, more dope kryptonite weapons.
Well, I'm glad that they brought them back, because we had a lot of it in the first season, and then we kind of got to the mid-season or so, and they're like, we're going to get rid of all kryptonite.
Right.
And I love that they used it as a tool, because the queen, like, Daxam was basically, as she said, littered with,
it makes
with the corpse of your planet.
Yes,
like,
it would make
dark
no sense if they didn't have a ton of kryptonite lying around
but
to build weapons out of.
Right,
me,
of course.
Yeah, the coolest thing ever was when she just whipped out kryptonite size, and I'm just like, oh my god. And then they just kept on with the Mortal Kombat reference.
Yes, I'm wondering how intentional they were.
Finish him.
Yes, we got that, and I think there wasn't a come over here. Something like that. And we got swoopy swooshy portals if you're a big fan of the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, definitely. That was...
yeah, swooshy swooshy portals.
I remember swooshy swooshy portals now. That really takes me back.
Anyway. so these bounty hunters are really putting a strain on Mon-El and Kara's relationship.
Sure.
We start the episode with them really, really, like, cutesy. Mon-El's learning how to cook and things.
It was so cute at the beginning, and it made me so happy. And you know, with these CW shows, that level of happiness just doesn't last in any way. When you see that, like, that opening, you know it's going to be a rough episode.
Well, especially with the number of references to Romeo and Juliet in this episode as well. As charming and, like, wonderful and cute as those references were, Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
It was great. But, like, I'm going, okay, so, like, how on the nose are these references?
Yeah, and that was what I loved, is he just clearly kept referencing it, knowing that they died because he hadn't finished it, even though she spoiled it. And he's just like, no, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, how are you going to spoil that book, yo?
Like, can you imagine, like, you would literally have to be from space, I think, to be at the age, the human equivalent age Mon-El is, and not know the ending to Romeo and Juliet, even if you've never read a book before.
Right.
He had this amazingly unique opportunity to get through one of Shakespeare's most classic tales unspoiled. She took it away.
I'm pretty sure he'd never read a whole book before, though.
I would be shocked.
But yeah, I love how nerd says Mon-El is a house husband. I actually said he was Kara's wife, so pretty close. That's funny. I was like, he was so cute. I was making you breakfast in bed and you ruined it.
Yeah. So cute.
I was really happy with this. But yeah, there's like that, if you watch The Flash, if you watch these other shows, you know that level of happiness, it just won't continue. And we see it over and over again on these shows. And so you knew that there was like a battle to come. And what we saw was really like them fight for their relationship, which I actually really enjoyed in the episode.
Yeah, it was actually a much more positive turn than I was thinking, even though we had a death. But it was still like, well, they're still together, so that's great.
Yeah.
And happy birthday to Patrick Peretta, who is his first time here in the chat tonight, but sent me on Twitter. Shares a birthday with Nathan Fillion.
Happy birthday.
Ooh, happy birthday,
Nathan Fillion, as well, if you're watching.
Happy birthday, Nathan.
In my dreams, you are.
Yeah. We love you so much.
So, as Stephanie mentioned, they have to fight for their relationship.
Yes.
And I really liked this moment between the two of them where, you know, Kara is really insistent that Mon-El talks to his parents and Mon-El just wants to run away. And you get both of their perspectives in that Mon-El knows that his parents will never stop. And Kara, being the beacon of sunshine that she is, really thinks that you can just talk everything out.
Is completely predicated on the notion that if we just appeal to their inner goodness, this will all be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is arguably naive, but wonderful.
I was so charmed by it. And it's something that, it is a little naive. You're absolutely right. But there's something that's so, like, sweet about that like we can all have like an inner like good self, and like to find that is important.
Yeah, it's the way the show is written and the way Melissa Benoist has consistently played Kara that like you can look at these ideas on paper and you can go, I'm all cynical and jaded and I don't buy into that type of blah 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 blahness, but it is so infectious, it is so heartwarming that you want to, even if you don't, even if you've got that like cynical block in your head that a lot of us have, you so want to believe it too. It is such a resonant feeling.
And to me, the fact that Kevin Smith directed this episode and that was sort of the central theme is just sort of how he is. And I kind of like that as someone who's a big fan of him, seeing, because he is that bleeding heart sort of person, always looking for the good in things. So I like that that was the theme of the episode.
Yeah. And I like that we haven't seen over the course of the two seasons, somehow she sees all this bad. I mean, every week she's in bad situations and somehow still believes in the good. And to have that, like, resonate every week on the show is also just really lovely.
Yeah, I'd agree. There was a moment early in the episode that I feel like really exemplified that kind of like both the combination of the character, how the character's written, and also the way Melissa Benoist plays it. Do I say her name right? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you got it.
Yes. But gross.
Moist.
Gross. The way that she plays it, and there's this moment when they pull up the image of her for the bounty. And she's like, that's me. And then as she like almost skips away like a little girl after she's like, I'll take care of it. And I think that that was so indicative of the character in that like there's an optimism that like just can't be beaten.
Without being cocky either. Because she's very self-assured in that moment. She's very like, oh yeah, if they come at me, like bring it on. I'm Supergirl. I got this. But it doesn't come off. Like I said, it doesn't come off cocky, which is a hard line to walk.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's confidence, not arrogance. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Kara is the true hero. Out of all the DC TV superheroes and everything, she, to me, is the best hero because she's truly selfless, truly does all of this out of the goodness of her heart, and is yet to do Flashpoint. Sorry, Barry.
That's true. Like, I would
close.
But, right. There's a really strong argument to be made for Barry, and then somebody will bring up Flashpoint, and you'll go, that's right.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, you were close, buddy.
Yeah. I also think it's in the tone of this show. It is different than the... Like, the Flash is fun, and it feels... Every week, it's has its moments, but it also, I feel like Supergirl is much more of a hopeful show in so many ways.
It is, because to me, Flash is almost like torture porn to Barry at points. Like, yeah. I mean, let's face it, for like 3 years, it's just like, we're going to give him a little bit. Yeah.
You had to watch both of his parents die in front of him, and... If the future that he sees is to be believed, he's also going to have to watch the love of his life die in front of him. It's a rough road to hoe for poor Barry Allen.
You understand why he might lose hope. And
totally, I can even understand why he might do a Flashpoint.
Yeah,
just bumps him out of top slot. But the hopeful quality of this show, and specifically Supergirl as a character, is a my single favorite thing about it. But B, that has always been what is so great about Superman. And I think this show, again, is like they're doing Supergirl, but it is the single, for my money, the greatest Superman adaptation since the original Christopher Reeve movie. And it is specifically because they are able to make her relatable and make her somebody you can recognize as having human qualities, even though she is not literally a human. But she is such a figure, she's an icon, she's an aspirational figure, and she's somebody that you can look to for those qualities that many of us, like I was saying before, like have let fall by the wayside in favor of hardened cynicism and abandonment of all hope and love.
Such sadness.
Need a hug. No, but I love that hopeful aspirational quality that this show nails so well, so consistently. That to me is what a good superhero should embody. Not that we can't tell dark stories, but I feel like past a point, you don't need to wallow so much. It's all about the like, look at her fly, look at her do good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like how infectious her behavior and her demeanor is, and you see it especially in this, how infectious it is in this episode, when Mon-El, like, he gives up his free will to his parents, and when he does, he starts talking about building a new Daxum, a more hopeful Daxum, a better Daxum. And I like that this is the one time that I feel like him changing for the better has really shown as a character.
Yeah. I felt like in that moment that you're talking about, when he kind of gives up control and saves the love of his life, or his current love, whatever, internet, tell me. I felt like, it was his first, like, selfless moment. She's selfless continuously, and it was his first time kind of making that turn.
Yeah, and I like that he acknowledges that in that moment he thought about what she would do, and I like that she then validated him talking about how he had changed. Because that's the thing, is this is maybe the first time she actually acknowledged it. It was cute.
And I love, too, his admission that doing the thing that he knew she would do terrified him. and he did it anyway because mm-hmm. of how deeply he admires her. And, like, it's hard. It's real hard not to love him because of how much he genuinely seems to love her.
I do. Yeah.
Also,
I
totally is that do. Not the best compliment that you admire? When I was listening to it, I was like, you don't hear that all the time. Somebody just being like, I admire you. That's so lovely. Like, mm-hmm.
yeah.
such a lovely thing to tell someone.
Aww.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's the purest of love.
Aww.
Thank you, studio audience.
I know. Just made it so cheesy. Sorry, guys. That was all me.
Oh, man. But the one thing standing in the way of Mon-El's new Daxam is his mother.
Pretty awful and dark.
She's not a super nice lady. And I love that it is Terry Hatcher, who did play Lois Lane on Lois and Clark, now coming back into this world and getting to play a really mean alien villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, Terry Hatcher has always played, like, the girl next door, like her as Lois Lane or as Susan on Desperate Housewives. So to see her as this badass villain, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
And she's killing it. A lot of the chat was talking about what a good job she's doing. Because, yeah, for me, someone who's watched her for a long time, I've never seen her in this type of role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're giving her a lot of, like, layers and a lot of juicy stuff to work with. And she is, she's, for lack of a better word, she's milking it real good. Nope, I'm going to put my hands up by my side.
You know what? It's like, it's not weird until you add the hands.
Yeah, it's true.
Because
yeah.
once you're actually milking the air, I can't not draw the rest of the picture in my head.
Yeah, she's pulling that sweet, sweet essence out and, you know, drinking it down. What?
You're doubling down.
Oh, yeah. That's all I do. Yeah. That's how I work. Anyway.
Oh, we have some great comments. we'll steer away from there for a minute. Michael Balsamo says, Lois Lane turned into a real bitch. And then Havoc 6280 said, Kat would say she was always a bitch.
That's yeah. true.
Oh, Kat.
Yeah, I mean, I just love having her back on the show. And yeah, she is totally a different character than we've seen her before. And it's kind of a fun nod if you've watched the original, like, the I'm trying to remember the name of the Superman series.
Lois and Clark.
It's just a fun nod to that.
Yeah, and if we were playing the hashtag game, like on Legends of Tomorrow, Helena Needs Hugs says, hashtag milking Tori.
I was thinking hashtag legendary performance.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that one.
I like yours, because this is How I Met Your Mother and pun.
Milking yeah. Tori sounds like a romantic drama with just the right amount of laughs.
I'd watch it and star in it.
Yeah,
pretty awesome.
Rosario Dawson is your love interest.
Oh,
who works on
yeah.
a dairy farm with you.
Dang. We need to get this greenlit right now. Anyway.
It's getting so weird.
It is getting weird.
It's Monday.
We were so good. We've done like half the show, guys. We were so yeah. on it.
I couldn't contain it. It's just oozing out of me.
Spiral. The milk?
Yes.
Yeah, Davey Elmer's like, Tori's going crazy.
Oh, man. I held it together really good, though.
A little bit.
Anyway, well, before we, like, really dive into Rhea, why don't we talk about something else? And that being iTunes, guys.
Dude, I love iTunes.
Hey, do you love what we're doing?
I do.
I love what we're doing.
Yeah.
Do you hear my voice going real high? My voice is going real high.
That's a love octave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You are so turking it up right now. He's JD.
Oh, yeah. Girl, I'm so glad you're watching this show. I'm so glad that y'all going on iTunes, liking and subscribing.
I'll help Tari out here. Man. We do have a 5-star review that is new as of yesterday. So, sexy voice. Okay, so good recap podcast. 5 stars from Tanner 5. I like that name, Tanner. 5 for the stars that you give Lex. This pod has improved since the first few episodes of season one. Gets better every week. The hosts do a good job giving a recap of the episode and also providing some extra analysis.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I like my analysis.
Extra.
Yes. B, who left that one again?
That was Tanner 5.
Ooh, be like Tanner 5. Go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating if you love what we're doing. It really helps us keep the lights on around here. It helps us get sponsors, helps us get guests, helps us as a whole. It bumps our show to the top of the charts and helps more people find us so that they can also enjoy this wonderful show that you are enjoying for how much, everyone? For free. Thanks, everyone. I was talking to the studio audience, and they were there as well. So please remember to like and subscribe, because it really means a lot to us.
Oh, man, we have some good comments. I'm just going to read this, guys. Nerdity Nerd Nerdist. Tari's always been crazy. And Casket Fan 1 says, hashtag high pitch Tari. Oh, no, it gets better, guys. Yadriel Kalon says, Tari is scaring me, but it's okay.
Yeah, that should be my, like, phrase.
And then Davey Elmer's like, throwing good-natured shade at Tari is fun. And then Havoc 6280 says, strange how Tari's sexy voice is higher and Lucretia's is low. And then someone, Corby1 just says bacon. And I think we can all agree bacon. That that's always a good comment.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's real great.
I mean, it's a throwback to the beginning of the episode. Bacon. Yeah.
Hashtag is all connected. Anyway,
speaking of connected, Rhea really connected those sighs into Kevin Sorbo's sides.
Yes,
am I right?
Nope. What? Kevin Sorbo out quicker than expected.
Yes, it was a very big bummer.
Yeah. I was bummed for that because I felt like we were just kind of getting into his dynamic with his wife, and I would have liked another episode or two of that. I understood that, like, he probably wasn't going to stick around forever, but I would have liked to seen a little bit more
he
of him.
He seemed like a really nice guy.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. He was just trying to please everybody. He seemed like a good little house husband there. You know, that's who Mon-El was modeling himself after in the beginning of the episode, you can tell. But yeah, then she Prometheus'd him.
Aww,
yeah.
Would you guys say that you're disappointed? That's a internet. It's a reference to an internet meme. Check it out. Google it. Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah, I was super sad that Hercules died.
Anyways.
Strange to not be able to look directly at you. next to you, which is a really rough.
Yeah, I would just keep staring at Lex. So, anyways, the...
Wait a minute.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't my world. Disappointed!
I'd like to imagine that took place after this character died. And then, like, he went straight into there.
What if Largand wakes up in Hercules' body and he spends a couple of days, you know, getting himself together, and then the pilot for Hercules' The Legendary Journeys begins?
That'd be great. Whoa. He's like, it must be this yellow sun. Got all the strengths, all the...
I look decade younger.
Yeah.
Look at all this yellow radiation. That is...
It's really good for the skin.
Good for
Not
me.
Not for us, but for Daxamites. Anyways, so he's dead now.
Yeah, super dead.
Which I feel like needed to happen. I know it's a bummer that he had to die, but, like, it really solidified Rhea's character.
Yeah, super evil bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the show has always had very strong female villains. So having him as an additional villain, I felt like would have kind of weakened it a little bit. So now we have our single unified force that they have to fight against.
I think it also shows clearly, like, it's not just about, like, her dislike of super, like, there's ways of playing that up. She's pure evil at this point, and there's, like, no questioning that. And so, like, if you kill your husband, try to kill like your son's love, like you're pure evil at that point. And how do you like continue to fight? And that's, I'm sure, what we will get after this hiatus.
But what is interesting about Mon-El's mommy issues, and I'm gonna get all psych on you guys, is that he likes strong women because his mother obviously was. So it was interesting to find that, because, you know, I love always pointing out those Freudian weird things.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely drew parallels between himself and his father in that, like, there's change happening, and then you could argue the same. Supergirl is obviously not evil, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
strong female. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to counter your point of her being pure evil. And say that I feel like she's really gray in that you kind of understand why she's been pushed where she is. Like, she's been in this, she's seen her whole world fall apart. She finally finds her son, and he is in love with this survivor, or one of the last survivors of the world that destroyed her own.
Maybe I will change my mind as we see her in more episodes, but I just felt like at this point, whatever's happened in her past can't justify what she did in this episode.
I think they're managing to strike a good balance between Tari. Like, what you're saying is, I feel like I buy, I don't necessarily agree with what she's doing, but I buy why she believes this is what she needs to do, while at the same time I feel like, yes, killing Largan, more so than killing her husband, is killing Mon-El's father, I feel like, is a really good way to get us from, oh, she doesn't seem very nice, to, oh, she gotta go, she's dangerous, no, she can't be trusted, she killed her own husband, killed Kevin Sorbo, she killed Hercules, gotta get rid of her.
I just
feel like there's nothing that can, like, maybe we'll get more of her backstory and I'll understand more and I'll come to have some understanding of it. But at this point, I just can't get behind her actions.
Well, yeah, I mean, she got real dark. She was willing to imprison her son. She killed her husband. Her next moves could be to just take Earth hostage until they get Mon-El. Like, she has this big warship under her control. So, like, she is a high threat, and she is willing to go do whatever it takes.
She's a little bit, Zaudi.
Yeah.
Like, she had, there was a moment where she referenced crossing an ocean of stars, which I believe is a term that Zod uses in his television message in Man of Steel. And I was thinking about the fact that, so she's got this giant ship, and she's presumably going to declare war on Supergirl and, by extension, planet Earth. She wants to bring back Daxam. They want to start a new Daxam. So it's a short leap to maybe they try to, if not terraform Earth, then pave over it.
Mm-hmm. And Havoc6280 has some pretty good comments here, calling her Darth Terry. That was pretty awesome. And says that Lillian and Rhea should team up. Yes, Mary Alice and Susan back together. Gonna blow up Wisteria Lane this time.
I feel like that's a very, like, Supergirl-esque thing to do. They like having fun with that kind of stuff, like the backstories of everybody.
Helena Needs Hug says, aren't Daxamites an endangered species? And she kills one of the only males.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I also don't understand, and this is just a personal thought I had when they were in the bar. I don't understand why they didn't start having babies the moment they got on the ship. And it may be to, like, conserve, like, rations, but, like, if Stephanie.
Yeah, what are you
thinking? Can you answer this for me? Stephanie, can you justify why they wouldn't have started having babies? I mean, it's been a long time, and I expected them...
It's just not where my head went in the episode. Like, that's all I meant by the face.
Well, our minds go to the gutter.
Well, no, not even the gutter, though. Like, they were talking about how, you know, they need to rebuild their world, and they've been on this ship for a long time.
Sure, I get where you're going. I can't say that that's where my head went at all. I feel like they're trying so hard to get a leader back. Like, they want their son to be the prince, and that's, like, what they're aiming for. Like, they have one goal in mind at this point.
And I'm saying they could have made a new prince.
Well, maybe not. I mean, no offense to anyone's ages or anything like that, but that may not have been in the cards for the... king and queen of Daxum. And, you know,
How does that work? Because they're not human, though. So, like, how does the Daxumite reproductive system change as the body ages, Tari?
And do you... compounding on your question, do you think that the yellow sun helps that aspect of it? And that it, like, rejuvenates them juices and gets, you know, and, like... allows them to reproduce longer. So there are lots of questions that I feel like, producers, if you're watching, we should really explore. Maybe not this season, because the season's almost over. But, like, and it's also shot and edited. But maybe beginning of next season, we really, like, dive into the, like, the effects of the yellow sun and the reproductive...
I feel like this is a spin-off series that you only want.
No, I'm pretty well an alien perv, too.
Like, I would watch...
It's a legitimate question. Yeah. It is not a pervy thing.
Danny Elmer is like, this has officially gotten weird.
It's a lot of talk about juices, though.
Yeah.
Guys!
That's where it went over the line.
Fine. All right. I'm going to talk about
that. That's not a complaint so much as an observation. Also, somebody in the chat a minute ago pointed out that there was a reference made to actually going back to Daxum and repopulating the planet now that they can live on it again. Mm-hmm. So then my next thought is, all right, well, what are they going to do to Earth? Maybe, right? 4 years, and we know you can bend time in this universe, right? Maybe on the 4-year trip, they're like, what do we do? All right, we're going to go to Earth. We got to learn about this planet that we're probably going to have to tussle with a little bit. Let's see. What is their entertainment like? And what if they somehow got a hold of a stream through time and space of the founder, and they watched the founder, and they watched Michael Keaton spread McDonald's throughout the land, and they're like, we're going to franchise Daxum, and Earth is going to be our second location.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And there's going to be a golden D above the planet that you can see from light years away, and it's going to stand for Daxum.
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah. All Earth is going to see that D.
See that Mickey D's.
Yes.
I mean, totally.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the literal goal. Yeah. All right. Forget it, guys.
Yeah.
You were talking a lot about juices a minute ago, dude.
Right. And the chat is loving this.
Speaking of juices, guys. We got some juicy relationship stuff between Alex and Maggie.
They're the sweetest. That relationship just continues to be one of the strongest, I feel like, across these shows.
Agreed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like that their relationship is actually progressing in such a, like, rich and realistic way. Something fun is happening in the chat.
It's just a coming out, man.
Havoc 6280 with the good comments tonight. I mean, there was one, like, remember Lois and Clark had trouble conceiving on, you know, that's a legitimate comment that has to do with answering this question. But then they said they could just steal sex slaves for Tori from Earth.
I don't want Okay. Guys, calm down.
You made it weird. It's all on you.
All I did was ask a typical survival question when you're trying to rebuild a planet. But anyways, let's talk about Alex and realistic relationships. Yep, that's it.
I really enjoyed that this... Get out of here. You just drink those juices. I really enjoyed that this subplot had nothing to do with superheroics at all. Mm-hmm. It was just about exploring a real and, for so many people, a very relatable aspect of relationships. And I love, there were early on in this subplot, I was watching these scenes going, everybody's so incredibly charming and they have wonderful chemistry and I love watching them do their thing, but what are we doing? Is this building towards something? It did, but it more even than the payoff, I think the fact that it made such a wonderful point, and it was so removed from aliens are going to destroy the world, and it was nice.
Yeah, I think that it was really nice to see this couple who has a completely different and kind of more realistic set of baggage than you see with Mon-El and Kara. Like, they have, you know, superhero problems.
Yeah,
where,
like, alien racism.
Yeah, like, yes. Alex and Maggie, it's real life, and they're dealing with, like, past relationships and things that humans deal with, and I really love that they're dealing with it in a realistic way.
And
Oh. Yeah, yeah, go.
I was just going to say, I love that Kevin Smith got to write this lovely lesbian story and have them fight and get back together, probably making up for all the people that are still angry about Chasing Amy. Don't worry. I love that movie. My cat's name is Banky. I don't get the hate, but I don't dive, so I don't know. Okay, I'm just making it weirder.
But speaking of Kevin Smith, I liked to, we got a Star Wars reference, which was wonderful, that Wynn being so overcome with joy that Manel has finally seen Star Wars.
Yeah, and Wynn was so adorable.
And is like, has seen it and is actually referencing it accurately in context, or appropriately in context, which is a big, I feel like that's another step for him as well. But also I liked when Maggie and Alex, to bring it back to them, the first scene we see them in where they're coming out of the yoga studio, the sign with the name of the yoga place on it was a nice little Yoga Hosers Easter egg.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
Oh, I missed that.
That's what I was pointing to at the TV, and everybody was like, yes, Lex, we see that they did yoga together. That's very nice.
Oh, I got it.
I was like, no.
I got it, because it's a Yoga Hosers joke, and then it's an extra Canadian joke, because hosers is what you call a Canadian. Hoser or Canuck. Those are Canadian insults.
Interesting.
Canadian facts.
I also, the thing I really enjoyed about this little arc that they had is that, like, the way it started, it felt like a classic sitcom trope where two people are in a relationship. They see the person's ex, and the other person's like, oh my gosh, let's have dinner to show you how cool I am with this, and wacky hijinks ensue.
Right.
And then instead and of that...
That's what I was talking about, too, about, like, they introduced this idea, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That, all right. Oh, let's see where we go with this.
Yeah, and then it turned into this really, like, genuine character-built moment where you take all these pieces that we've experienced with them, the lying about her coming out and the other lie that she had told, and they made it into something that wasn't about the ex at all, but about the trust they have in each other.
Yes, and I love that it's okay that they're not perfect. It's okay that, like, yes, you maybe didn't handle a situation or two in the best, most responsible way, but that's all right because you're a human being. It happens. We can forgive each other. We can learn. We can grow together. That's what relationships are for. And I love they retroactively earned this, what you described as, like, the sitcom-y plot device. They retroactively earned it in such a big way by, like I was saying, like, so sticking that landing.
Yeah. I'd agree.
Not to get off this super important, like, subject matter that was actually about an important character building arc, but Sarah Brock says Canucks is not an insult and I have a good burn. It is when you never want a cup.
Oh, hockey!
Sports joke!
Hockey.
For those five other fans that may know. Sorry. I felt that was enough. But yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. I bet she's really steaming right now.
I know.
That person. You know, cups are... one last thing before we jump into predictions. We got this piece with the president, President Linda Carter.
Yes.
And she's like, don't engage, blah, 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 blah. but the big piece to come out of it was we got a full transformation from her at the end. It was the last time we saw her, it was implied
we saw the eyes, right?
Yeah, her eyes had lit up. But there, we don't have any additional context. We don't know if she's good or if she's evil or what her end game is. We just know that she's an alien. And so this could lead to predictions if you have predictions about it, but unless you have current comments about it at this moment.
Well, I did love whenever, you know, John's like, how did you figure that out? I was like, her lasso of truth, buddy. That is how she gets information from everything I've ever seen.
It's true.
It's there.
It seems like there's a chance, I mean, with an alien president, maybe she will end up helping Cadmus to stoke these anti-alien sentiments in an effort to, like, provoke some type of conflict between species. But Cadmus seems to have taken a step or two back, although we know when the show returns, we're going to see some more Lena stuff. So there's an opportunity to maybe bring some of that back in, tie it all together.
Right.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, I guess we have this little break in the show and then comes back in April. where it goes in these final few episodes. I feel like there's a lot of loose ends at this point. Obviously that included. And it'll be interesting to see which ones they tie up and which ones they leave for season three.
Okay. Then I'm going to jump into some predictions real cool.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Yes, Lex?
Oh, no. I was just going to say the tiny couple of little bits that we didn't hit on was Martian Manhunter being awesome.
Oh, yes. He's awesome.
Yeah. Beating up all those dudes and also doing some cool shape-shifting stuff. Wynn being super handy with the tech. It's always nice.
Yeah, yes. I loved Wynn popping in and saving him. saving his bro, Monel. They were like Turk and JD.
And then what was the other one? Oh, yeah, and then James getting to be Guardian again for a second.
Yeah, that was nice.
I'm almost not worried about whether or not we do anything. There's so much going on this show that I almost don't mind that James Olsen shows up for a scene or two here and there, and then all of a sudden, here I am with the shield.
I do always want more of him, though. I feel like we get little... I hope that that's something that happens in the next few episodes.
Yeah. I just hope that... I actually want him to just always pop in. Like, anytime you see him in an episode, you know that at some point he's going to jump into the Guardian garb and be like, I'm here! And then disappear for the rest of the episode.
Somebody... We scrolled away and I don't remember who said it, but somebody just pointed out, we can't let this episode end and go into the bank without mentioning this amazing psychic battle that Martian Manhunter has with the bounty hunter in the cell.
Possible puppeteer. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was great.
Melting of the mind.
And it's just, they CG'd the dude's head, but it's just these two actors making faces at each other.
Incredible.
They pump the tone and the music in the background and do fun stuff with the camera. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy to watch. I felt like that was one of those moments where you're like, how do you do this on that kind of budget? That's crazy. And they do it week after week. And
I love
this
show.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Anyway. Yeah.
All right. So we're on break until the 24th. In the next episode preview, we see that there is a killer on the loose, and we get a little bit of Lena Luthor, and we get our not our good friend, but the CW's good friend, Raul Coley, from iZombie. I'm sure I butchered that name. Doesn't matter. It matters.
But... No, it's called iZombie.
Oh, great. Thank you. Oh, I always get it wrong. Based on the preview or based on what we've seen for the episode, what do you guys have for predictions?
Well, we got a little quick shot of Snapper Carr, and that tracks with what I believe I had heard somewhere on one of the internets, that this was going to be a very journalism-centric episode, which excites me because I feel like all of the little bits we've gotten this season where Snapper schools Kara on what it means to be a real-deal journalist, I love so very, very much. And I feel like this show seems to understand journalism more than most fiction that I've seen. So I'm excited. I would love more of that.
And I love Ian Gomez, and I would like to see more of Snapper Carr. And I sort of have this in my vision now with him and the dude from iZombie being all Zodiac. And it really excites me. He's going to go all Robert Downey on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Nothing too much to add, but just that I'm excited to always journalism on this show. It's so fun, and, I think that is another dynamic. It reminds me of, I think Kara in the newsroom is just a really fun place, so excited for that.
The name of the episode is Ace Reporter, so I'm hoping it is very much a gumshoe episode. That it could be... that Kara is not even a part of the episode. It would be very ambitious of them to do at this point, but, have... it just following Snapper Carr, following leads, and then have the other characters bobbing, weaving in and out of the episode, having to do with him, but really having doubling down on a noir kind of story.
I would watch that show. Maybe not for 7 years, but I would totally watch a limited event series that was all about journalists trying to do real hard hitting good journalism in this big DC universe where you've got all these characters and all these stories, and investigating these leads will lead you down these paths. It could be like Gotham Central, but for the newspaper.
Yeah.
And Snapper Carr is the lead.
That would be cool. Amazing. And I hope that's what we get the next episode. That's my prediction.
And then he gets
prediction.
A robot friend like he has in the comics.
How great would it be if they did a crossover with The Flash and Iris and Snapper Carr and journalism go nuts?
Journalism. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I would watch the crap out of that.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Me too. Says so much.
Oh, They said we forgot to mention the stapler. Nerdity nerd nerd. Yeah, and I was just Office Space. Have you seen my stapler? That's what I pictured in my head when Wynn had it up.
I feel like this should be a lesson to everybody, though, because for a second I had to remind myself why. It's like we're not at the DEO, so we can't just reach into a drawer and pull out a big weapon. Which then, to me, raises the question, why do we not keep... We know that you're Supergirl and that aliens may at any point try and show up at your home to kill you. Why do you not have some weapons stash, some DEO weapons stash for, like, Alex and your buddies to grab in case of such an event?
Yeah. She's Supergirl. Come on.
Yeah, she's Supergirl, but no one else is. It's like, I'm shocked they had weapons stashed all over in random places.
Like, if Psychic Bro Bald Man, that's his name,
yeah.
Deep Cuts DC character from the 40s, if he, when he took control of Mon-El, if he had just turned and put his fist all the way through Wynn's chest, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, that could have stopped that if we had it, well... You wouldn't want to shoot Mon-El. This raises a whole lot of, like, big moral questions. But still, DEO weapons.
Yes.
Non-lethal, if all you right. want to be, like, super heroic about it and noble. But, like, better home defense if you are Supergirl.
All right, Lex, why don't you write the DEO some sternly worded letters about their protocol?
I'm going to invoice them for my time, too.
Great. Good. I hope they pay you well.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any last thoughts before we wrap this baby up?
Eh.
Nope. Yeah. Doesn't sound like they do. Thank you for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV. We really appreciate you watching week to week. In between now and the 24th, which is when the next episode will air, you can catch us on social media. I am Tari J. Miller. You can find me at Tari J. That's T-E-U-R-I-J-A-Y. But also, you can find these wonderful people all over the internet. Where can they find you, Stephanie Winger? Mm-hmm.
You can find me at Stephanie Winger all over the internet. And also check out Pretty Little Liars. Our after show is back before this one does in mid-April.
I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media. It was my turn, and I wasn't ready. I am all over social media at TheLexMichael, and if you're a fan of DC on the CW on ABTV, catch all of us talking about all these shows all the time. We talk about Supergirl on Mondays, Legends of Tomorrow is on Tuesdays. I do that with Lucretia. Arrow's on Wednesdays. I do that with Tari, and sometimes Lucretia. Come join us. We love you.
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And we also do a show on a little network called Book Circle Online. Lex is usually there, and I'm mostly there, and maybe some other people will show up. But yeah, it's called The Comic Book Exchange. Be sure to check that out Wednesdays at 6 p.m. We learn some stuff.
Excellent. Once again, thank you for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV. Don't forget to like and subscribe, as we always say. And until we see you again on the 24th of April, have a super week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Just do a thing.
Somebody say something.
Someone say something. Oh, my God. Juices.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.